I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Texas Titans Podcast. Just like the name of the podcast suggests, I will be visiting with Texas Titans of business, academia, sports, or whatever their chosen field, looking for the disciplines and habits that have made these Texans so remarkable. Success leaves clues, and I want to crack the code to these Titans' success and share it with you. Thank you for joining me here on the Texas Titans Podcast. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Texas Titans Podcast. I am here with today's sponsor, which is Office Pride and the East Texas area developer, David Stein. As you folks know, I want to bring to you real business people, real business leaders, and entrepreneurs. And David Stein is not only a dear friend, but an entrepreneur in every sense of the word. David, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jason. Glad to be a part.
Well, I'm glad you're a part because you're paying the bills today, brother, as my sponsor. Thank you.
Come on.
All right. So first of all, tell me a little bit about how you got involved with Office Pride and what you guys do and what sets you apart from your competitors.
Absolutely. So about 12 years ago, someone I knew from the community had found out about Office Pride. It's one of those businesses that flies under the radar. It's commercial cleaning, janitorial. So it's office cleaning at night. You leave your office, you go away. We come in at night, you come in the morning, and trash is dumped, clean, dusted, et cetera. And so we got into it. We started his franchise. I branched off a couple of years later, started my franchise, and it's been a great ride. It's an unbelievable franchise. It's got great brand recognition. It's got great brand integrity. It's got operations. It's got support. It's got a plan. I'm a corporate America reject. And I just got tired of corporate America after about 30 years. Always wanted to do the entrepreneur thing, but never had the guts to do it.
Right.
Some people have to get thrown off the cliff, and I was one of those people. And so we started it 10 years ago, but never looked back, just excited about it and the opportunity for me, for my family, and what it's allowed us to do.
Well, and I know as Office Pride, being a large franchisor, and you have become a leader within the organization, tell me what separates you, not only Office Pride from your competitors, but you as a franchisee and a developer for this area. What separates you from the competition?
A lot of it comes down to, it really is the core values that are behind everything what we do. Most of the core values are great customer service things, total brand satisfaction, honesty, integrity, and a hard work ethic. Go the extra mile, accountability to commitments. But the first one is honor God. And in everything that we do, we want to do that would be pleasing to God. And so you can't be almost honest or almost integrity. You're either in or you're out. But it's a process, and it forces us to hire right, to train well, to follow up, and just do the things that we say we're going to do. And that's really what differentiates us is the execution. Our retention rate is 90%. Wow. The industry average is 65%.
Wow.
And there are reasons for that, and it comes in the execution.
Wow. All right, David. So one of the things that I ask every leader that is sitting in that chair or on these interviews is, in The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Stephen Covey's book, there's a chapter in which he says, you're walking by a church, you hear music, you walk up, you walk in, and you realize you're at a funeral. You see the casket, you walk up, and you realize it's your funeral. When that day comes, when it's all said and done for David Stein, what do you want said about you and your life's work?
Well, other than he is so much like Jason Wright.
You've got to shoot way higher, man.
There's only a few people that could say this, and it would be, I would want my wife Stella to say, I can't imagine my life with any other man, and so glad that we married, and that my 3 daughters would say he's the best daddy that anybody could have ever had.
Well, I can tell you, as someone who has known you for going on 20 years, brother, I think you're definitely on track for that to be the case. I cannot begin to tell you how much I appreciate you believing in me, believing in the Texas Titans podcast, and supporting me in this way, man. Thank you so much.
I'm glad to do it. You and I have been friends for a while. We followed similar paths, but I believe in you. I think this is going to be something. while this can be good for you, I think this is going to be great for people who listen. And so I'm glad to support it. Anybody interested in Office Pride, just Google Office Pride Tyler. It's real. I can give you phone numbers and websites, but Google Office Pride Tyler and you'll find us.
Fantastic. David, thank you, brother.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jason.
Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Texas Titans podcast. I have got to tell you, this is one of my favorites. In fact, I mean, it's really been gratifying to see how this little journey that I have embarked upon with the Texas Titans podcast just keeps getting better and better. And this week, I interviewed my dear friend, Phil Burks, who is, by all accounts, one of the most phenomenal business leaders, community leaders, entrepreneurs, makers, innovators, you fill in the blank, whatever descriptor you want to put on Phil Burks as just being a true peak performer in every aspect of business, it will probably fit. He is a remarkable man. Throughout this interview, you'll see that it's not always easy getting to where he has. I mean, you walk into the offices of the Genesis Group, and you realize that it just reeks of success. I mean, it's this very high-tech, space-age almost looking headquarters, kind of like what I mentioned in the podcast whenever I'm talking to Phil, that it's very Google-esque, tucked away in the pines of East Texas. But before it became this serene, picturesque setting that it now is, there were a lot of struggles along the way, and we cover that in the interview, and it gets pretty emotional for Phil because this has been a long, hard journey of ups and downs and an illustration of persistence, hard work, and doing whatever it takes to see success not only in Phil's business, in his personal career, but also in that of his employees. So it's just a great interview. This one touches on all the aspects of what I really wanted to convey through the Texas Titans podcast. So please listen to it in its entirety, and I hope you enjoy my conversation with Phil. So before we get into it, though, I want to give you Phil's background. Phil has a BS degree in electrical engineering and technology from Laterno University. We're going to cover a little bit about Laterno because my suspicion is many of you that are outside of East Texas, you may not realize what or Laterno University is, but it is a phenomenal little university. A little faith-based school right here in East Texas, located in Longview, that I think you'll enjoy learning more about as we go through this conversation. Phil has, for the last 29 years, has been self-employed as an entrepreneur. He is the founder and the CEO of Burks GenCore Company Incorporated. He is the founder and CEO of GenCore Candeo Limited, GenCore International Limited, GenCore LLC, MBCG LLC, and First Technologies LLC. Shortly after college, Phil Burks began a rising career in sales with Motorola. An oilfield client offered a new position and opportunity for Phil to start a tower rental company. And in 1980, Jecca Tower, I think I'm pronouncing that right, J-E-C-C-A, Jecca Towers was born. Jecca owned towers and also sold and installed towers for MCI, AT&T, and various communications firms. Jecca grew to 65% cash flow, and in 1988, Motorola made an offer that was accepted to purchase all assets of Jecca Towers, and the Genesis Group began. In 1989, Genesis grew from a single DOS DOS-based billing software product that Phil wrote in his bedroom to now over 30 Windows and browser-based software products that are designed to enhance Motorola critical two-way radio systems. Genesis software is globally installed for clients like Motorola Australia, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, Bell Mobility Canada, the states of Florida, Virginia, Louisiana, Arkansas, Illinois, South Carolina, cities of New York, San Francisco, and many, many others. Genesis has grown to include over 60 full-time employees at their Tyler office, an office in London, and close affiliates in Melbourne and Mexico City. In April 2013, Phil stepped down as president and promoted Jim Nipp, VP of Business Development, to president. Phil remains as owner and CEO of the Software Enterprises. Currently, and most recently, Phil became an investor and director of X-Craft Enterprises, a drone manufacturing company in Idaho, along with X-Craft CEO J.D. Claridge, who was on Shark Tank. Phil has created First Technologies, LLC, to develop and market a specialized drone for police, fire, and ambulance called First Eyes. That's spelled first, the letter first, I-Z, but it's pronounced, but it's referred to as First Eyes. That's the actual name. As far as his civic involvement, many local nonprofit boards Phil serves on, including being a founding member of the Tyler Innovation Pipeline, which your host of this show is actually a member of that board of directors, and would love to reach out to all of you for support of the Tyler Innovation Pipeline. Management style. Phil defines his management style as first being a servant. And this is a quote from Phil. "I want to set an example that others will follow. If I have a problem doing that, then I have no business leading others. I give responsibility and authority for each person to run their areas, and I stand behind their decisions, right or wrong. If there is an occasion where an employee has made a bad decision, I will correct them in private and give them a chance to make it right." Phil works hard to empower his employees with responsibility and freedom to do the tasks that are present, and will only do follow-up as needed. Folks, that's the professional bio, but you really get a sense of who Phil Burks is and the companies that he's built through this interview. I'm very proud of this one. I hope you enjoy it. And I can't tell you how grateful I am to the continued growth of the podcast. I keep getting more and more feedback. The downloads are increasing far faster than I ever could have thought. So thank you for that. Enjoy this episode. Please don't forget you can go to jasonrightnow.com to read my blog, Make Your Own Rules, which I think you'll enjoy. It also has all the ways you can contact me. I've got several services and information there on things that I do for both private individuals in the area of coaching and executive training, as well as my speaking practice. So please check that out. But then also read the blog, Make Your Own Rules. I think you'll find that pretty enjoyable. Some pithy ideas and wisdom that I've drawn from virtual mentors such as Ryan Holiday, Tim Ferriss, Gary Vaynerchuk, and others that I'm constantly reading to see how these peak performers are doing, what they're doing, and the practices they're deploying, and try to distill them into some wisdom to put there into the blog. You can also find all the episodes of the show on iTunes, Spotify, whatever platform you choose. We're out on all the major ones, or you can just go to texttitans.blog and you can listen to the podcast there, both present and past episodes. You can also check out show notes there as well. So I'm grateful for you doing that. Thank you all for the support. Enjoy this episode of the Texas Titans podcast with my friend, Phil Burks. Well, here we are on another episode of the Texas Titans podcast, and I am with my dear friend, Phil Burks. Phil, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Jason. I'm so much better having seen you today.
Well, you're gracious for saying that. Now, I tell you what's really cool about this, seriously. So we're sitting here in the headquarters of Genesis, the company that you built from scratch. Okay. And I still remember where we are. And for the listener, because you can't see it, literally, this is like a Google-esque headquarters tucked away in this little piney enclave of Tyler, Texas. It's so beautiful. It's so serene. I'm surrounded by glass, and outside that glass is a rolling topography, pine trees. It's just beautiful. And I remember when this wasn't here, Phil.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when this was just the trees. And so what I would like for our listeners to hear today is the story of Phil Burks, the genesis of Genesis, to where it is, because I know it's a great story. I've heard the story, and I have followed not only the success of Genesis as a company and the things you're doing in the technology space in which you serve, but also just you as a business leader. So, you know, today I want the conversation to, it can be about anything you want, but the things that I'm going to selfishly ask for is basically telling us about Genesis, what you guys do, and then the struggles to get here, because I know there's a really cool story about you just kind of going all in, putting all the chips on the table and making this thing work. And then what disciplines that you have deployed to get to where you are. And also the final thing I want to touch on, because I know that you have a heart for service, for charity, for community involvement. I mean, everywhere I turn around, there's your involvement. You and I, we serve on the Tyler Innovation Pipeline together, and you literally have been the single largest supporter of that, making sure that we bring innovation and technology and entrepreneurship and awareness to Tyler. So with that, let's just get started, man. Tell me, who is Phil Burks? Where are you from? And kind of take me into the early days of your career.
Well, before I get into that, for the listeners, Jason did a really good job of deploying what we have here. The highest compliment that we ever got here, Jason, was when a real estate developer from Northern California came in, and he was looking at this, and he was oohing and aahing at this building, and he goes, "This looks like it belongs in Northern California."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yes,
yeah,
that's what we were going for." Something just different for East Texas, high tech in the Pines kind of thing.
Yeah.
And also for your listeners, in case you don't know, Jason doesn't wear socks. So we're sitting here sockless. At least one of us is. So.
Well, you're not supposed to tell all my secrets, man. That's the good thing. You know, I've got a face for radio, man.
Well,
you know, as
likewise.
Well as the attire.
Likewise. gosh, okay. So I started life in, I was born in Chester, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb of Philadelphia. When I was probably 2 years old, mom and dad moved to Levittown, Pennsylvania, which was a growing ticky-tacky box city that the Levitt brothers built to support a new burgeoning steel industry that was there. U.S. Steel built a plant in Fairless Hills, and my dad went to work there in the steel mill. So it was a blue-collar family. Dad grew up on a farm, one of 13 kids. Never had much of anything, but he was a hard, hard worker. Mom was a legal secretary. Two of them met, which that's a phenomenal story in and of itself that we'll do that on some other podcast.
Yeah.
It involves the former president of Wycliffe Bible Translators. And
remember
that story?
It is a phenomenal story.
It is a phenomenal story. But anyway, I grew up there, graduated from high school in Levittown, Pennsylvania. Heard about a really interesting college in Longview called Laterno College back in those days. This was 1970. I applied there and one other place, got accepted at Laterno. I think I was the only one I got accepted to. Came there, spent my 4.5 years getting my four-year degree in electrical engineering technology, and graduated and was working all the way through college. Started working in television and radio all the way through that. Again, I also have a face for radio. And, started, helped build an AM radio station in Gilmer from the ground up. Went on to be a DJ in a bunch of different formats. Worked two radio stations simultaneously. KHYM, which was a gospel station in Gilmer that we helped build. Then drove like a madman down to KFRO in Longview. Signed on playing, we used to call it, prepubescent teeny bopper bubblegum rock, till midnight. And, so switching personalities and so forth. That was a lot of fun. And then went to work for the ABC affiliate here in Tyler, anchoring weekend news and reporting. And I'm going through this iteration because I've got a point that I'll get to on this in just a second. Went from that to working for Motorola, selling two-way radio communication to the oil field people, air conditioning people, anybody that had a need to communicate. This is back in the 70s. And then I had a customer of mine said, "Hey, let's go into business and let's put up radio towers, these tall red and white structures with the red blinky lights." And so it took me 2 years to decide, but I did. He gave me a piece of the company, gave me a car, gave me the same thing that I had with Motorola. And we built a bunch of towers, including the station that I had worked for, KLTV, the ABC affiliate, built their tower. And, built that business. And then along comes Motorola and says, "We want to buy that company from you." And we said, okay. Nextel, if you ever remember the name Nextel, they were also a bidder. Motorola doubled Nextel's bid. And we said, "Let's think about that." "Sure."
Right.
"It's yours."
Right.
So my chunk, my 10%, was worth a little bit of money, not a whole lot, but in today's terms. But you know, for a you know, a 30-something kid, it was a huge amount of money, and it took that. And I had written a piece of software during that time because my brain leaks, and I had to have something to keep it sane because I had to bill customers every single month, and there was no software out there. This is the days way before personal computers. Well, not before, right at the beginning of personal computers. So I wrote this piece of software to keep me sane so that I could keep track of all of my customers. And then when Motorola bought the company, they did an asset buy. Now, I'm going to give you, your listeners and you, one of the secret sauces. I've said three smart things in my life that I've ever done. One was to ask my wife to marry me. Number two was to ask Jesus to be in my heart. Number three is this. When it got down to the question of what should we do with this asset called EasyBill, which is software, they were looking around the room. Well, what should we do with that? Because we'd gone through all the other assets, which are towers and buildings and everything else. And I looked at them. I said, well, and here you go. Depends if you want the liability or not. And they said, no. And I said, fantastic, I'll take it. Well, I knew what the liability was because I wrote the stinking stuff. Right. So it was an easy one to do. Wow. But what you can do is ask somebody in something, you know, when you're selling something, if they want the liability that goes associated with it. And you play off of the strengths and weaknesses of people. And I wasn't being nefarious in it. Right. It was an actually honest question.
Right.
So they said, no, you keep it. Well, that is what I used to start all of what is now the Genesis Group. And that was 29 years ago. It would be 30 in December of 2019. So that's kind of how we got from there to here.
Well, tell me a little bit about your interest in technology so early on. I mean, like, I know whenever I was a kid, I used to take old radios apart. Just tear them apart. Now, the difference in me and you is most likely is they stayed torn apart whenever I tore apart, and I never figured out how anything worked.
Nope.
I never knew anything. But was this something that just intrigued you at a young age? Would you do that? I mean, kind of take me back to how do you end up following this path?
No, that's absolutely right. And no, I'm right with you. I never put anything back together. Although I did take it as a chance to learn. I learned what resistors were, capacitors were, tubes. Mm-hmm. And I actually built simple circuits out of those things.
Wow.
My dad saw this interest, and he would come home from work and somebody had given him an old radio or an old TV or whatever. And he had built a workshop, mostly a woodworking workshop, onto a garage. But he built me a workbench where I could take these things apart. And I would literally take the components and catalog them and put them in capacitor drawers. And then I had to learn, well, what's the value of this capacitor? So I got books. Mom and Dad bought me books. And I can still remember my mom yelling, turn the light out, go to bed, while I was reading electronic books to learn, teach myself what all this stuff is and how does it work.
Yeah.
Just a curious kid by nature. Of course, that's got me in trouble, too. I actually was enamored by a guy named Nikola Tesla back when I was a kid.
Yep.
And I convinced my mom and dad. I have no idea why they let me do this. But they spent, in those days, probably $50. Well, I mean, that was huge money back in those days. This would have been in the early 60s, I guess. And I put all the components together, and I built a Tesla coil. Now, this puppy puts out 100-some-odd thousand volts.
Right.
And I built this up in our garage and then had it up in my bedroom upstairs, and I can still remember one night I turned this thing on. It's got lightning firing out from everywhere, and our next-door neighbor comes over, your house is on fire! Your house is on fire! No, that's just our son.
Well, that's awesome because like my brother and I, we laugh because we used to like throw M60s in the in the living room to blow up.
Oh, brilliant!
But we didn't do anything that cool though. I mean, we just lit a match and blew stuff up. You're actually building stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, we did the M60s, M80s, I guess, or whatever.
There
they
you go.
But, yeah,
there you go.
And put them into model boats and floated them out, you know, and then they blow up and then boom. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Now, I built stuff like that, and I remember my dad telling the story. I actually don't remember this. But I built a wireless FM transmitter as a kid, and my dad came in from work one day, and I was transmitting from my bedroom upstairs down to the FM receiver downstairs and saying, "Hi, Dad," you know, and he's looking all around trying to figure where's this coming from. Wow. But, you know, it's just tinkering, yeah. You know, and I encourage anybody, just be curious, curious by nature.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, maybe the difference is I took those things that I took apart, never put back together, but built other things out of them.
Yeah. So. Well, and the cool thing is, like, so now, you know, terms like maker and entrepreneur or, you know, whatever, those are sexy terms now, but, and that's one of the things that I want the listener to understand. And one of the reasons why I have Phil on the podcast is because you've been a maker, quote unquote, since way back. Yep, I mean, that's kind of what you did. All right. And then I want to make sure that we do, we highlight a little bit Laterno University because you end up in, I mean, that's a long jaunt. So describe to the listener, because I don't think, you know, Laterno is one of the most well-kept secrets, and not just in East Texas, not just in Texas, but the United States of America. Incredible history there in engineering and what Mr. Laterno started way back when for his own, you know, for the community and the employee he was trying to create. Right. So tell the listener a little bit about Laterno University.
Oh, thanks for asking. I'm going to start with the end. Yes, I was a student there. I am now a trustee at Laterno University. So we've kind of come full circle here on this whole thing. But when I applied, I knew R.G. Laterno as an inventor. He invented heavy earth-moving equipment. He invented the electric wheel, which is used all over the world now. I forget how many hundreds of patents he had. But he was a man of integrity also. He has a great book called Mover of Men and Mountains, if any listeners would like to pick it up and hear his story. In so many ways, Jason, my story parallels his. Accidentally, in air quotes, I came with just the idea that it was a college that had a faith basis to it, which I had as a child as well, and it had an engineering focus. I knew that they had welding. I knew they had mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, and so forth, and that was the big thing. But one of the things that he did that really intrigued me, you know, as a faith-based person, we are taught to give 10% of our income back to the Lord, but he flipped it. He gave 90% and kept 10 for himself.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he did.
Wow.
And he talks about that in the book. He said it was not a really conscious, we're going to do this tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It just evolved. He just kept giving more and more and more, and God kept giving him more and more to give.
Right.
But he had machines. I think I read that most of the early days when Eisenhower put the interstate highway system together, his machines were used to do most all of the clearing and the laying of the foundations for the interstate systems. Back in World War II, a lot of his machines were used all around the world. Just a phenomenal inventor and a man, hard-driving man as well. So that was my thought process in going. And, you know, and as happens in so many things, I got disconnected for a bunch of years, building family, building company. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have any time. I didn't have any money. You know, you make what time you need, of course, but I just didn't take time. And I was contacted about being involved back at Laterno for a thing they called a President's Advisory Committee, PAC, which is a low impact. It's lunch once a month, and you learn what's going on at the university. And it grew from there. And now, Laterno University is, I think the moniker they're using is a Christian Polytechnic University.
Wow.
So it has everything all the way from a nursing program all the way to aeronautical engineering, one of the great avionics schools in existence. Mm-hmm. They graduate people with degrees in air traffic control.
Right.
They have undergraduate degrees in drones, which I know we'll probably get to talking about. So it's a phenomenal university that has a faith basis for the whole thing.
So now let's go back to, you've sold your company, you're in your 30s, you've got a little chunk of change, and you're going to decide what to do next. What do you do?
Yeah, a lot of prayer. I have this definition for an entrepreneur, and that is a man that's on his knees Friday night praying for payroll on Monday.
Okay, you're going to love this. If you haven't heard this, so Trey Bowles, one of an interview I did a while back, great entrepreneur, just a phenomenal guy. He gave me a quote that I had never heard in all these years. He said, entrepreneurs are people, are the only people, what did he say, that will work 90 hours a week so that they won't have to work 40 hours a week.
Oh, absolutely. And now, I will tell you, that, and I've told audiences this, Jason, and I really, I said this when I spoke in chapel at Laterno University. I said, I propose to you that R.G. Laterno was lazy. You could hear the gasps coming from the audience.
I can imagine.
And I said, because I am lazy. I work hard to be lazy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, build a bigger machine so you don't have to work as hard. Yep. Build a better mousetrap. Build software.
Right.
So anything you have to do over and over again, you don't have to do. And you can go do something else.
Absolutely.
That is absolutely a true statement.
Absolutely.
In those early days, it was a survival. Mm-hmm.
Now, what are you doing at this point? So you've got the tower company that's sold.
Right.
Are you doing another iteration of that, or have you moved on to a different technology?
So I wrote that software.
Okay.
And so when we sold everything, I was left with the software and a little bit of change. Okay. So the first thing I did was I read a book on how to become a consultant, because a consultant is a person always looking for a job, right?
Yep.
And I thought, well, I don't have anything to do here. I had a couple of customers for that software that I had when we had the tower company. And so I went back to them and started improving the software a little bit. And, it's kind of, and this, by the way, was done in those early days in our bedroom. And the reason I know exactly when this was is because our son, Joshua, will turn 30 in November, and this all started in December 30 years ago. Wow. So he was on my shoulder literally in the middle of the night while I'm, rocking him back to sleep after changing his diaper, and I'm writing code until 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and then Mom would take the day shift. So that genesis of it right there. I'll tell you a fun story that you and I alluded to just a little bit ago before we came on the podcast here. I got to the point where I'm going to remember there was like $182 in the bank. I had $5,000 worth of bills sitting on my desk. I had no idea how I was going to, and I was panicking. And I had them, I could still see them. They were sitting on my calculator, which was off to the right. And I did what I tell people I did what I call a Pat Robertson moment. I literally got on my knees. I put my hands on the bills and I said, God, I have no idea how these are going to get paid. But I have seen you work miracles in my life in the past. And I got nothing here. I'm out of ideas, I'm out of energy, I'm out of steam. And if these are going to get paid, you're going to have to do it. Turning it over that far and saying, and if it doesn't, we'll close it. We'll go do something else. Walmart, they'll probably hire me.
Yeah.
I got up from that prayer. 10 minutes later, I got a call for an offer for a consulting job in what is now called the Batman Building in Nashville.
Yeah.
If you look at that building, it's got the two spires. I got a consulting job to help figure out how two-way communications could fit into that top along with broadcast and how we do it with isolating customers and competitors and so forth like that, because I'd done some of that with our tower company.
Right.
And take a guess at what the value was of that contract.
I'm going to say it was somewhere around $10,000.
It was actually $5,000.
I mean, $5,000, because that's what you
$5,000. $5,000. That's exactly what it was.
Wow.
So I asked him, I said, any chance you could give me $2,500 in advance? And they did. And so I was able to take care of those bills and then pay the credit card down a little bit and fly up there and do that consulting gig.
Yeah.
So that hasn't happened once. That has happened, I can't even count the times where those things have happened, where God was saying to me, how much do you believe in me?
Yeah, yeah.
I tell people all the time, Jason, and this is a good time to tell this. I tell the story about three guys out fishing in a boat. don't know if I've ever told you this story. And it doesn't matter who they are, but I tell it as three different ministers.
Right.
There was a pastor, there was a Catholic priest, and there was a Jewish rabbi. And again, please understand, listeners, this doesn't matter which way this goes. But so it got about lunchtime, and the pastor said, oh, you know, it's lunchtime, and I forgot my lunch. So he gets out, walks across the water, goes to his pickup truck, gets his lunch, walks across, comes back to the boat, sits down, goes back to fishing and eating. Well, the priest says, well, I've been, you know, drinking my drink here all morning long. It's time for me. I've really kind of got to go. So he gets out of the boat, walks across the water, goes behind a tree, walks across the water, sits down. Well, the rabbi, not to be undone, says, well, it's time for midday prayer. So he steps out of the boat, sinks to the bottom. So the pastor and the priest look at each other and say, think we ought to tell him where the rocks are? So every day, my prayer, Jason, is that God will put my foot where the rock is. I can't see it.
Yeah.
It's below the surface.
Yeah.
I know it's there because I have stepped on the water enough that I know that it's going to be there. But my prayer every day is, Lord, put my foot where that rock is.
Yeah.
So it's like these consulting jobs. I don't have a clue most days what's going to happen with those kind of things.
Right.
But they just happen.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, Phil, and it's a great... a great moment to mention to the listeners there who think they want to be entrepreneurs, because there's a big difference. I've worked with people that have come alongside me in different ventures. They thought they wanted to be an entrepreneur. It sounds sexy. It sounds great until you actually are faced with those moments. But if you're up for it, there are some opportunities for some amazing things to happen. I had a similar situation in which I had been in business for about 3 years. And so I started making a little bit of money. Well, with money, it comes taxes.
Yep.
And I've always tried to keep a little bit of a cash cushion, right? And I would try to build up. I had a certain number that I would always want to meet. And it seemed like every single time I start to get close, something would come and wipe it away.
Absolutely.
And I'll never forget one time I get this $10,000 tax liability. I have to pay, and I have in a little strong box in my house, I'd squirreled away about $10,000. And I remember going and getting the $10,000 just as angry as I could possibly be. And I prayed. I said, well, Lord, I guess you're just showing me you don't want me to have cash. And Phil, it was almost audible. It wasn't.
Yeah, yeah,
but I mean, everything within me heard the Lord clearly say, no, it's not that I don't want you to have the cash, but if you'll notice, every time you need it, it's there. And moments like that, again, they come over and over. And
over
so I would just tell the listener, I don't know what your belief is. I don't know what your faith is.
Right.
But be ready, because if you're going to step out into this life and into this world, you're going to have a faith of something, because there will be those times where you're going to look up and you're going to tell your significant other, sweetheart, honey, whatever, diddums, pudding, whatever it is, I have no idea how the mortgage is going to get paid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you may even find yourself in a situation like I've been in where you've made the mortgage payment for an employee, not even knowing how you're going to make your own.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's entrepreneurship, baby.
Well, may I camp on that for just a second?
Absolutely.
So, thank you. I love the organic nature of this podcast that you're doing, Jason, because this, for the listeners, I've, you know, it's not all roses, and it's not every time, you know, that I have learned my lesson. Sometimes it takes a big old fat 2x4 upside my head to get me to learn these things. And I actually told this story to a group of, and I'm blanking on the name of it, but SCORE is involved with it. It's teaching young entrepreneurs how to do business.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just told the story the other night, and it actually brought tears to my eyes. So hopefully I'll get through this without it. Early on, what you just said is so true. I had several employees. This is in the early 90s. Probably had 5 employees at the time. And every night when I go to sleep, probably like you, you see those employees' faces.
Absolutely.
And their families.
Absolutely.
And you're thinking about them. And if you're not, there's something wrong with you as an entrepreneur, because that's your goal, is to build those families, build those people. You build the product, you know, but you build the people, they will build the product.
Right.
That's an old Zig Ziglar thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
They will build the company as well. But I had a problem with taxes. I don't know if I've ever told you this story.
I think so.
And this was in probably the mid 90s, late 90s, by the time it finally festered. But in the early days, I chose to pay the employees when I couldn't pay the IRS. Mm-hmm. And so it, you know, every so often it would build up and then, you know, something big would come in, I'd pay it down a little bit, but it never got it completely paid off.
Right.
Well, it got worse. As we all know, and entrepreneurs, I'll give you the biggest warning biggest red flag in the world. Whatever your nut might be with the IRS, your penalties and interest mm-hmm. will double, triple mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. They don't mess around. Yep. And it had gotten pretty big. And I had had several conversations with the IRS who, you know, trying to work out, not an offer and compromise, but just trying to work it out over time, the payment schedule.
Right.
I would also advise, avoid that if you can do that. I was on a plane trip to Jakarta, Indonesia. Motorola had paid me big money to go over there to install and train our software. I got off the airplane. I had a voicemail waiting. This is early, early cell phone days. And it was from my CPA, and she said, "You need to call Bobby. Bobby's my wife. Is she all right?" "Yes, she's fine, but you need to talk to her about a financial matter." And so I called Bobby, and I'm 10,000 miles away or wherever I am, and I get this, "What in the world is going on?" I said, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "I went to pick up my paycheck at my job, and a man in a dark suit and a white shirt takes it from me and says, 'Thank you very much, I'll take that.'"
Oh, wow.
I had not told Bobby
wow.
what was going on.
Yeah.
Biggest emotional mistake of my life. Huge mistake. Yeah. Never, ever keep your spouse in the dark on anything.
Wow.
Your spouse is your best advocate.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you think, you know, like comes and go, love will not end.
Yeah.
But I was over there, and I could do nothing about this situation. We've since gotten over it. You know, we're good. But yeah. It almost cost me my marriage.
Wow.
And long story short, we did do an offer and compromise, which the IRS allows you to do once in your life. And it took, mine was up closer to $200,000.
Wow.
And the root of that was closer to $50,000. And borrowed money from friends. They allow you to do this, but you have to pay them cash.
Yeah.
And then we paid it off, and it went away. But that will never, ever leave me. And it was a teachable moment, because I learned, and I never did that again.
Yeah.
But it pulls up a business conundrum. Do you pay employees when you have only enough money to pay them and don't pay things like the IRS?
Yeah.
And I posed that to the group, and I said, "I'm not going to give you an answer."
Yeah.
For me, it sort of worked out.
Yeah.
It was painful as all get out. And one of those employees is still with me, Jason.
Wow.
20 some odd years later, 25 years now, I guess. And there's another one that's virtually the same length that's still with me. And their families are flourishing, and they are making great money. They are leaders. They're vice presidents in our company because they believed and stuck with me. Yeah. There were times where they went, I think the highest was 6 or 8 weeks without paychecks.
Wow.
But I still have an email that says, "Please believe, please believe."
Right.
And I pull that out every so often when I'm feeling down, but it worked itself out.
That's awesome. What a great story. And, you know, going back to Zig Ziglar, no one will care how much you know until they know how much you care. And what those employees saw in you is, man, this ship is being steered by someone who truly cares about the folks that are on board with him. And so, and a great lesson, because I'm telling you, like, again, going back to where this all started, to the listener that walks in here into this gorgeous corporate headquarters in this beautiful, serene setting, they don't know those stories. They don't understand. You know, a similar story, and I won't name him on the podcast because I didn't get his permission to tell the story. But there's another story where one of my closest friends, entrepreneur, he had rolled the dice. He was a builder and had done everything. And this is a great guy. This is not a bad guy. This is not a Bernie Madoff. This is not somebody who was, you know, doing any kind of crazy shenanigans. He had gone all in on his business, and he got to the point where he was so broke that his wife, with their children, is at McDonald's and tries to pay with her debit card, denies the debit card. She has no cash. And he told me, he said, Jason, I had no cash to bring her to pay for the McDonald's where she was stuck. Gosh. I mean, those are the stories that I'm telling you, folks. Be careful what you wish for. You may find yourself an entrepreneur. Right. But if you believe in what you're doing, at the end of the day, that's what kind of sustains you, right?
It is.
Is you know that it's worth it. It's just like we were talking about. You'll work those 90 hours building something that you can look back upon and that to keep you out of the 40-hour work week for building something that is meaningless to you. It's just a paycheck. But it can be gut-wrenching and tough.
It can. I also tell audiences when I get to speak, and this is not original to me, but if you have an old-fashioned dictionary at home, and if you have an X-Acto knife, go home to that dictionary, open up to the Q section, take the X-Acto knife, find the word quit, and cut it out.
Yeah.
You're not permitted to quit.
Yeah.
You are permitted to fail.
Absolutely.
You are permitted. Please allow yourself the permission to fail and fail forward.
Yep.
But do not quit.
Yeah.
Do not. And if I haven't said it enough, don't quit.
Absolutely. Well, hey, well, and that's a great point, too. And again, you know, and I love this, man, because, you know, another one of Zig's things. I mean, this is great. Anytime you can bring up Zig, you know you're on the right track. Right. But one of his deals is, what was it? Failure is an occurrence. It's not an identity.
Yeah.
You know, and so many people, and to the listener out there, because, I mean, the podcast isn't about me. It's about my guests. But you're listening to a guy. You're listening to a host that if there was a way to fail, a lot of times, I found it. But fortunately, I had good people around me and enough cushion and margin during those times to not fail so bad that I literally stepped back and just, you know, considered myself a complete failure.
Yeah. So. I tell young entrepreneurs and people I get to mentor, sitting in that chair where you are right now, Jason, where, you know, I've said to them, you know, you're going to have those days where you're going to take four steps back and you're just going to go, well, crud,
yeah.
I can't do this.
Yeah.
Well, there's the word can't. I said, can't is a four-letter word. Do not do that. It's won't.
Yeah.
That's the only word you're allowed to say. Okay, I won't do that. But you can't say I can't. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But what I said is, on those days where you get those four steps back, try to do one step forward. Mm-hmm. Even though your net is three back, take one forward where you can feel a little bit good that you did something.
Absolutely.
That day. And then you're going to have those wins where you're going to take 10 steps forward, and it's, you know, your net positive.
Right.
But try to do something each day.
Absolutely. All right. So we software.
Yep.
Company.
Yep.
All right. Take me back there. We've survived some. We've dodged some major bullets. Some bazooka blows. Now take me to. Now is this how far are we now from Genesis? Where are we in the?
So Genesis was actually running at that time.
Okay.
Genesis was started in 1989.
Okay.
In December of 1989, and so all of this was happening in the 90s.
Okay.
All right. Now. Tell you an interesting thing. In the late 90s, and I don't know that I've told you this story either, Jason. In the late 90s, I had a guy approach me with an idea for doing a way to do very inexpensive long-distance telephone calls. Okay. This is back when we all walked around with our calling cards. Uh-huh. Remember those things?
Oh, yeah.
And to call from Turkey, as an example, back to the United States was $7 a minute.
Wow.
And this guy happened to have relatives in a South American country, and he says, I got to find a better way to do this. And he says, you're a technology company. What ideas do you have? Didn't have any. Well, he did some research, and he found a guy that invented a little box that had no name on it. The guy was an engineer. And this is pre-Vantage, pre-Skype, pre-any of this stuff. Uh-huh. And so they brought the box to us, and we, you know, got to learn what it did. And what happened, we ended up naming this box IDA, IDA, for Internet Digital Appliance. And you'd, this is back in dial-up modem days. Remember those,
of course.
The psh, psh, all that fun stuff. So you would unplug your telephone from the wall, plug IDA into the wall, plug your telephone into IDA,
uh-huh.
program IDA to dial your ISP, your Internet Service Provider,
okay.
back in those days. kids don't have any clue what that means today.
Right.
But anyway, that's the way we used to do things. So what you would do is pick up the phone and hit star 22, and Ida would say, enter the phone number you would like to dial, followed by the pound sign. So you enter the phone number, whatever country that you wanted to call, pound, thank you. She would jump on to your local internet service provider, go through the internet, jump off in Turkey, we'll use that as an example, and make a local phone call for you. And we figured out how we could do this for 30 cents a minute anywhere in the world. Had ads running in American Way magazine, and it was wildly successful. Well, and again, this is an entrepreneurial story. We got to the point where we had to get this thing up to the next level. I was seeking $10 million in equity that we were going to sell a piece of the company. Several great friends around here, including me, had invested money into this thing. And by the way, this was all happening at the same time we had the offering compromise with the IRS.
Wow.
Okay. And so all of we have so many dynamic pieces going on. So we're seeking this $10 million. We could not find one person that was willing to put the money in. And I was really getting frustrated. I was saying, God, what are you trying to do here? This is such a grand idea. And by the way, I might tell you, these calls could be encrypted, 128-bit encryption, which is pretty good encryption, anywhere in the world. We ended up having a lead for some entrepreneurs in Pakistan. So group, not including me, of our company, flew over to Pakistan, opened up IDATEL, we called it IDATEL, Pakistan, had a big grand opening, and while we're over there, one of the gentlemen involved with it says, hey, you need to meet our investors in this thing. Okay, well, they jump on a train, drive like 12 hours out in the middle of nowhere, stop, pull off on a siding, run a phone line out to the train house, make a couple of test calls, and then they wait. They wait. And finally, their investors come riding up on horseback, and they tie off their horses. And they come on the train, and they make test calls to their, quote, air quotes, their hotels back in the U.S. And they were just, they loved it. And they wanted, I forget what they wanted to order, like three container loads of IDATEL. Well, holy moly, you know, this is where the $10 million was needed to produce this.
Yeah.
And we just could not get that to work. That happened to be, Jason, in very late, I think it was actually in 2000. That happened. And it wasn't until 9/11/2001 that the word Taliban meant more than guys on horseback.
Wow.
Those were Taliban that came up. And our company failed for a lot of other reasons that I don't need to get into, but not getting the $10 million was one of those reasons. And they would have had very good, discreet, hardly traceable technology to communicate through the internet with our IDATEL boxes.
That's crazy. You have never known. I would remember that story. I did not know
that's true. In fact, I've got an IDATEL box back here still as kind of a memory of that whole thing. But the company failed. So don't always look at failure as a bad thing. It could be a protection against something else.
Yeah.
Now, somebody could say we quit. We didn't quit. I mean, we had to end it because there was financial reasons and everything else, but it was a failure.
Yeah.
We didn't decide to walk away. It you know, it was a different reasoning.
Sure.
But it was funny. The company closed out, and then when 9/11 happened, I said, wait a minute, I've heard the word Taliban before. Where was that? Oh, my word.
Wow.
True story.
That is crazy. Well, all right, because now this is one thing, and then we're going to move more into the present, but again, to make sure that I'm always want to add value for the listener. So this is not being discriminatory. It's just you're a man, I'm a man, and there's certain traits I know that I have displayed that seem to be typical amongst men. When you're in a situation where the IRS is breathing down your neck, you're trying to run a business, and now you've just found out, now there's a whole element going on at home.
Right.
I know that in one of the biggest failures for me is I go and I isolate myself.
I do as well.
I retreat, and I think as men, that's caving. What we do.
We call it caving.
We retreat because the last thing we want anyone to know is that we're in the midst of potential failure. During those times, What did you do? How did you keep yourself in the right mental state? And or what did you do wrong that you that yeah. if you found yourself, if all of a sudden something happened, you know, God forbid, and you're faced with that sort of situation mm-hmm. that you would do differently today, what does that look like?
Oh, man, that's hits into the home. Mm-hmm. Gee, thanks for asking.
Didn't mean to go Oprah.
No, that's all Oprah. Yeah, thanks for going Oprah on us. No, it's true. I mean, my wife called it caving. I would go into my cave.
Yep.
When I grew up, my mom and dad had what I would call the perfect marriage. I never saw them mm-hmm. fight. That's actually a problem because I didn't know how to deal with conflict yeah. in marriage yeah. And conflict in business. I mean, I just had to figure it out.
Yeah.
And I recognized it in myself where it was almost a depression that I would yeah. have. You know, you've absolutely been there. You feel that. But I guess... I mean, you've heard me say this before, but, you know, through my faith and prayer mm-hmm. and, you know, learning more about how to deal with this by listening to other speakers and so forth, I recognize it as a weakness that I have. So what I do in my relationship with my wife and with our folks around here now, I actually... have to, it's just like if you're getting ready to do something you don't like to do, like let's say swim. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some people that just can't stand water. Mm-hmm. You just have to say, all right, I'm going to do this in 3, 2, 1. And I have to get myself to that point where, and I'm now better about getting out of that cave much, much faster.
Yeah.
And as well, and I'll be very honest, I've learned how to surround myself with people smarter and better than me.
Yeah.
There are people here at Genesis that I have in place to take care of the weaknesses that I have, mm-hmm. that I recognize, and I've declared to them, I have a weakness here. I have strengths in other areas mm-hmm. that you may not have,
yeah.
but you are here to handle those areas for me that I recognize that I'm not good at.
Yeah.
Always surround yourself with people that are better than you. That's something I've done ever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
I can remember the early days when I was at Laterno, I was working for Channel 7. I would get up 6 a.m. on Saturday mornings and go sit with 5 men that would smoke their cigars and just talk about life, who were leaders in the Longview industry,
yeah.
Bob Cargill and other guys like this, that just listened to them because I wanted to just soak up what they had.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing around here. Always surround yourself with somebody smarter, better, and people that help you in your weaknesses, but don't shy away from your weaknesses. Admit them and get people that can help you.
That's so huge. So I just told the story because I just read this. I wish so badly I could remember the article where I read it, where this guy, it took him forever before he would get a suitcase with wheels on it.
Mm.
Because he thought, I'm an executive and that's cheating. I want to have a nice leather bag to carry through the airport. And besides, I mean, the wheels, that's just kind of cheating, you know, to pull. And until finally one day he's like, that's so dumb. No.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you translate that into business
yeah.
and being the entrepreneur. Like, great, I know analogy. For me, when even though I knew the weaknesses were there, I wouldn't admit them. I thought, no, I need to be able to do everything and to pass it off, to delegate it. One, to admit there might be someone better
yep.
than me. And two, that's just not what you do. No. I mean, when I bought my first company, I was mowing the grass around the office. I was the IT guy, and Phil, I do not have your technical prowess, I assure you. I was doing all these things that I should never have done. And I can tell you right now, there are businesses that I've been a part of that it literally stunted the growth
mm-hmm.
to the point yes. where I'm not even in them anymore. Yes. But had I recognized this individual is good at this, let me pass up because it's just not what I'm good at. But it took me so long to realize it's okay to say. As a matter of fact, it's quite admirable to find that person that can say, I don't do that because I'm not good at it, or I don't want it. I don't like doing it.
This is an appropriate time to have an amen because yeah. I fired myself as president of Genesis 6 years ago.
Yeah.
6 years ago. A guy named Jim Knipp. Phenomenal guy. Came out of the .com era in the Austin, Texas area. And I could see qualities in him. Oh, that's another whole God story. Jim sent me an email and says, I'm coming to work for Genesis. And I said, you're doing what? He said, God told me I'm coming to work for you. I said, well, do me a favor. Tell him to tell me. And so literally, you know, we did that. That's a true story. And I said, tell him to get a 2x4, knock me upside the head. Right. One day, sure enough, it was true. But it was the smartest thing I did. And it was, and to the entrepreneur that's listening, there is a death that has to happen. And this also happens in succession between a father going to a son. You know, when you turn over those reins, you actually have to have a mental death in your head of that event. You have to go through the mourning process, yeah, and you have to let it go.
Yeah.
And it was not an easy thing, obviously.
Right.
Jim took over. Jim, I mean, now it's a machine. It just runs. But in the first year and a half, maybe two, I kept wanting to pick it back up, you know, not because he was doing a bad job, but there's also that psychological bit. You miss the joy of that,
sure,
that race,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
So I found other things in life, you know, that give me that joy with Tyler Innovation Pipeline and another startup that we'll talk about.
Yeah. Well, all right. So let's get into the nuts and bolts. Now, what is Genesis working on today? What is paying the bills at Genesis? And then I do want to get into First Eyes because it's drone technology, which is sexy. It's cool. And seriously, I want to learn more. I want to know where we're going with the whole drone technology.
Yep.
So let's talk about Genesis. And also, as it relates to not only how you pay the bills with Genesis, but talk to me about how the organization is structured, because you do have such an incredible culture. That's one of the things, Phil, that as I talk to leaders, and literally the last three, I think, interviews, I've talked to the leaders, culture, employee buy-in, employee purpose is so key to success. Don't just talk about what Genesis does, but kind of how you've structured this place so that people love Monday.
Absolutely. Tall order, but let me and stop me if I start taking a tangent here. But let me tell you what Genesis does. We do, it's a complex title. We do performance management software for Motorola two-way communications.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. You got that? And the way I describe it to people, if you ever see a policeman, fireman, ambulance, they have two-way radios. They have walkie-talkies that they talk into. Well, that is not just on your TV. That's actually used every single day all around the world. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these walkie-talkies. We currently have over 2,000 customers, most of which are public safety customers, cities of, counties of, states of, province of, and in, I think it's about six cases, the nations of, that use two-way communications to coordinate men, machines, public safety all around the world. We have large corporate clients as well that have them. Several of the airlines I could mention, and they use them for coordinating maintenance and so forth. We build software that is like the dashboard on your car. You have a car, you have a truck, right? Mm-hmm. You have a dashboard on that car, Jason. Mm-hmm. Could you drive your car, your truck, without the dashboard?
Not very well. No.
Okay. That's true. Because your dashboard tells you so much about what's going on. When am I going to run out of fuel? But technically, you could, because you got a brake, you got a, you know, gas and all that kind of stuff. But the dashboard really makes it work.
Right.
Well, we do a dashboard for Motorola two-way communication networks. Motorola has over 70% of the global market space for all this stuff.
Okay.
And without our software, it's all reactive. A guy walks in with a radio and says, this thing doesn't work. Ours allows them to be proactive and know. The prime example I use is City of Boston. They bought our software probably a year before the famous Boston Marathon shooting.
Right.
Our software went in, showed them how they needed to rebalance all of their channels between downtown and their surrounding areas. Mm-hmm. They did the rebalance. The Boston Marathon shooting happened. Of course, first responders are all over their network, and the network worked flawlessly.
Wow.
Not because of us, but we were just a piece in that.
Sure.
But that's the story that gets told an awful lot about how our software is used. So that's fundamentally what we do.
Right.
We also then parlay that into a thing where we have a piece of software that helps dispatch ambulances. You ever used Waze?
Oh, sure.
All right. So it's a great navigation app. Mm-hmm. We actually have an exclusive with Waze in the United States to consume the traffic information and other information that comes through it for helping to dispatch first responders. So we have all this information. If you have ever used Waze, you know that you can press three buttons and say, I just saw a major accident.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? 40% of the time, we know about accidents 4.5 minutes ahead of 911.
Really? Because of the repository of information coming through the Waze?
Absolutely, correct.
Oh, wow.
Now, not all the time, but that's 40% of the time. 4.5 minutes is a game changer.
Yeah.
We were installing it and training it for Champion Ambulance Service, which is over in Longview, not far from where we're sitting and talking. And 20 minutes into the training, three things popped up and said, major accident on Interstate 20 at Highway 135. The trainee said, do you think I ought to send an ambulance? Our trainer, Chad, says, yeah, that looks valid to me. She did. 11 minutes later, the 911 call came in.
Wow.
We're doing that every single day.
Yeah.
We add in layers of weather and so forth, and there's stories I could tell you about weather. But the concept, so that's kind of what we do with Genesis. We're out there helping our first responders and corporations to better utilize the two-way communication, get the value out of it. But then that kind of got me thinking, and I'm not going to go into the whole story, but I ended up investing in a drone company that happened to be on Shark Tank, and it's called X-Craft. And I got talking to J.D. Klarich, the guy that's the CEO, and we got talking about how we really wanted to move the drone industry forward. And then I got talking to him about what we do. And within about 20 minutes at a trade show, we cooked up this whole concept called First Eyes. And First Eyes leverages that information that we have in Genesis Pulse to get ambulances and using Waze to get ambulances out faster, mm-hmm. fire people out faster, get them through the right roads to get there. And we said, what's the holy grail for our first responders? That is, we call it situational awareness.
Okay.
Now, to break that down, that means letting them see what's going on at an incident, a fire, a disaster, an accident, before they get there.
Right.
That's like time travel.
Sure.
Well, we can do that with this drone that we've created called First Eyes. It's actually a drone system. And what happens is, if an incident pops up in a 911 center, they call them CAD systems, computer-aided dispatch, the dispatcher can say, I want a drone for that. We file all of the automatic flight plan stuff with the FAA. We program the bird with the incident where it knows where the bird is, knows where it's going, and the flight path is already approved by the FAA, all done within roughly 45 seconds or less. We have a human that goes, yep, this is okay to go. The bird takes off vertically and then transitions to horizontal flight over 60 miles an hour, gets out to the incident, usually beating the wheels that are on the way, sending live video back to them so they know, hey, I need to come in from the northwest, not the southeast.
Yeah.
I need three trucks, not just one. And by the way, I can see there's power lines down. The caller never said anything about that. We need the power company in here first. And we happen to have gas sniffing technology on the bird. We can drop the bird down to the deck and sniff for natural gas leaks or anything like this. Or if it's an overturned tanker, do we need hazmat in here first?
Right.
And then we go back up in the air and we wait until boots get on the ground. We call it loitering. We go around in a circle, keeping the camera poised on the incident. And as soon as boots get on the ground, we go back to the drone port, the house that we come from, land, go back into charging, wait for the next mission.
Now, does First Eyes, will you have your own like command center, for lack of a better word, or will that be something you train law enforcement to have their own kind of dispatch center where they're controlling the drones? How does that, in other words, will this be something that if Tyler PD decides we want to be a First Eyes client, will you also have the ongoing, okay, you can do it, but you're like a subscriber base. Mm-hmm. We're the ones that are going to control it, or does the actual client control it?
C. it's kind of a combination of all of it. We are going to have a dashboard, but it's going to be less about the incidents and more about are our birds performing to the specification that we've told the FAA they will perform at?
Yeah.
Are the drone ports where they live? Is the air conditioning working? Is the door performing right? Are the charging mechanisms working right? We have that dashboard. The local entities may have a dashboard, but they're more than anything, they're interested in what's coming out of the bird, the video, the optical video, the thermal video, the gas sniffing information. That's what they're mostly interested in, right? So they will have that. But C is that we're going to do this as a service. Our plan is not to sell anything. We're going to, for lack of a better term, and this is registered trademark, so I got to be careful saying it, but it's drones as a service. Mm-hmm. So we would come to the city of, the county of, or the 911 district of, or the fire district of, and say, got a deal for you. For X number of dollars per month, we'll provide a bird and the port, or a network of them, might be 10 that cover an entire area. They will all be networked together, and for a monthly fee, you get the bird, you get oversight, you get battery changes if necessary, props, maintenance, et cetera, like this. Right. And we'll put this out all across the United States.
And as an entrepreneur, I love recurring revenue.
Mailbox money's great.
That's fantastic. All right, so this is one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Phil, and it's one of those where I'm trying to look smart. So listener, understand, your host is just trying to look like he knows what he's talking about. But also it is, I think, a topic that plays with this artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
So you're hearing so much done with artificial intelligence. So I could see an instance where all of a sudden, because you're using like an aggregator, so to speak, with the Waze, all this information is coming in to where the technology, the artificial intelligence says, hey, no one's noticed, but there's probably about to be another wreck on I-30 between Texarkana and, you know, White Oak. Or that'd be I-20, but whatever.
Yeah, I get your point.
So how are you seeing AI playing into this sort of technology?
Oh, absolutely. Of course, you know, being our little corner of the world here for first responders, you know, I'm watching the tea leaves, so to speak, you know, for the entire industry.
Yep.
And AI is absolutely playing into it. Let me tell you about one thing that we're going to do, and then I'll talk about the AI. There's another one called AR, augmented reality.
Mm.
So augmented reality, I'll explain it like this. Jason, you've flown in an airplane. Have you ever looked down and go, gee, I wonder where I am?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could absolutely see the roads and so forth from the airplane?
Yeah.
Well, we have that ability from our drone. So as the drone is flying, it has technology in it to know exactly where it is in the air within plus or minus, well, depending on a lot of factors, plus or minus 5 centimeters, X, Y, and Z, as well as it knows its yaw, its pitch, its azimuth, and the zoom it knows everything about what it is. Then we can layer in road names, points of interest, power lines, fire hydrants, all these things that we can layer over top as it's flying. So it knows exactly, and the observer, the dispatcher, can know exactly what's going on. And we can pump that same video information out to the incident commanders, they call them the ICs, that are out on the site, so they can see everything.
Wow.
While they see the live video matched up with it.
Wow.
Right on top of it. Okay. So, but the augmented reality is being used an awful lot for, it's actually being done. It's a very simple thing to say, I know what this place is supposed to look like. What is different about this now?
Right.
Is it a package that's shown up? Where's that yellow box going? It's those kinds of things. There's a lot of AR or AI that's being added in to only give us pop-up notices when you see something that's different. I had a conversation with a gentleman with the Department of Transportation in the state of Ohio at a recent trade show. His vision is to have drones, literally hundreds of them, at major intersections where they are known to have major accidents, that the drone lives in a box, that from a command center, they can just push a button and the drone just whizzes up in the air. And it would be what we're calling a tethered drone. There's actually a tether on it, and power goes up the stream to the bird, and fiber optic brings all the video and all the command information back down, and so that can be fed back to a command central, so they can use that to see ad hoc, in other words, as it's happening, what's going on, and you could use, certainly, predictive analysis to look at it ahead, to go, the traffic just increased in this area, which means the probability of accidents goes up. So let's get this bird in the air. It doesn't cost us anything. You know, it's not like a helicopter where it's several thousand dollars a blade hour to put it in the air.
Right.
The permanent cameras they put up, they are great. They're wonderful, actually. But these birds can be put up ad hoc when you want them at any almost any intersection and be taken down and moved someplace else pretty easily.
I love that. And that's one of the things, you know, I think with all of the intelligent city and smart city technology, mm-hmm. all this stuff that's happening, the predictive technology to and the preventive technology being available now is really cool. So all right, well, now that gives the listener some details on some of the cool stuff that you guys work on at Genesis and First Eyes. Now, as an organizational leader, what's it like to work for Phil Burks as well as just Genesis First Eyes? What does that look like?
Yeah, and that's I did skip over that when we're talking about Genesis. So you're absolutely right. Culture is so important here, and in fact, so much so, Jason, that we've actually, you know, like most any entrepreneur, we've had a couple of offers to buy us out.
Sure.
I wrote down non-negotiables. It was about 10 items that are non-negotiables. And number one or number two on it, I'll give them, these are about the top four, and I forget which exact order they were, but maintain the brand if you're going to buy the company. And there's a moratorium of about 24 months. I said, I don't expect you to keep it forever, but in 24 months, you're going to know what you've really bought. More than the numbers, because the numbers are just an affect.
Yeah.
You know, it's the people, it's everything that's here. But you got to maintain the brand. You got to maintain the people. You cannot fire anybody. You can't come in and do a 20% head reduction just because you got to make numbers.
Right.
You're going to have to spend 24 months getting to know these people. Then you can do what you want. And maintain the culture. Those were the top three things.
And that's a tall order, right? That last one, I think that's the toughest.
Guess what? I walked away from millions of dollars because they couldn't sign up for that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying I'm anybody special. It's just that lives don't have a price on them.
Wow.
These people that are here need to understand that I value them.
Yeah.
That Jim Knipp, the other guys that are in leadership here, value them far more than any product.
Right.
Far more than that's going to come and go. You know, years ago, you remember Promise Keepers?
Oh, sure.
So I heard something there that just stuck with me. And you got to think as an entrepreneur, who's going to cry at your funeral?
Yeah.
Who's going to be there to mourn the fact that you're not there? Is it going to be your customer? Possibly, but not likely. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be your family? Yes. Is it? And this family that we have here is very much the family. We had a hard thing recently. I'm firing off in two directions here, but we had a product line that we had been working on for a number of years, and that product line ended. And we were doing it for a customer, a very large customer, and that ended. And we didn't have any income to replace that. So we unfortunately had to do a layoff. And it was the hardest thing that we have done in our 29 years of existence. And it was about 10 people that we had to do. But what we did, we told them, this is no fault of yours. We gave them 6 weeks plus 1 week per year that they had worked here, plus COBRA their insurance, and plus letters of recommendation. Plus told them, you're welcome back here to come if you want to engage in what we do for our culture. We've already had several come. Meals on Wheels is a big one that we do. We've had several of them come back and work Meals on Wheels routes.
Yeah. So like you created alumni, which I think is huge.
Exactly.
That to me shows the strength of a culture when people consider themselves an alumni of an organization that they want to continue being a part of.
Yep. We had a guy, and this is a great story. This tells about the culture, Jason. Years ago, he was hired number four, maybe number five, very early on. When I hired him, his name's James, he had a Red Bull in one hand and coffee and a cigarette in the other hand. I had no idea what Red Bull was. I thought he was drinking in the parking lot. But and James came to work for us, worked for many years. He got an offer across town for almost double what I was paying him. And he came and talked to me. He says, Phil, he says, I've had this offer. And I said, well, he said, I'm not trying to hold you hostage. I said, well, James, even if you tried, I said, I can't I just don't have that. I can't pay it. Mm-hmm. There's no way. But man, I hate, you know, hate to lose it. This is a great opportunity for you and your young family. So we went to work for this other guy across town. 11 months later, I got an email from him. He said, Daddy, can I come home? And so we went to lunch, and James, I said, so James, I said, why do you want to come back? He says, I don't care what you pay me. But he says, I learned why the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And I said, why is that? He says, because the direction the cow is facing. He said, I got pooped on every day.
Wow.
And he says, I don't care what you pay me. I got to come back to Genesis.
Yeah.
Because you build me up every day. You give me high fives.
Yeah.
You make me feel valued. At this other place, he was demeaned, told he was not worth anything, and he was there just as a worker.
Yeah.
And so that speaks volumes to what we do to this day. Yeah. We have a whole thing, hashtag Genesis Gives Back, where we have employees are given the opportunity to take a small amount from their paychecks, $5 a paycheck, yeah, put it into a fund, and we have a committee. Then if they have a passion about what they want to give to, we give to it. Yeah. We also then have a committee where we've dedicated approximately 10% of our net profits. I'd love to have it higher, mm-hmm, and there are ways to do that. 10% of our net profits that we give back to the community, all the way from Meals on Wheels to CASA to other nonprofits.
Right.
And so that's just, the way to give somebody a smile when they're really down, and that's to get them to do something for somebody else, right?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
We're teaching our employees, some of which are millennials, how to do this.
Yeah.
So when they go someday to another company, they have the tool sets,
right,
to go take the Genesis way out and proliferate it around the world.
Well, and I mean, so going back to kind of like we were talking about, when you're in those deep, dark moments, and I'm telling you, the listener, I'm telling you, this will be one of the hardest things you've ever done. But if you're in a funk, if you are just flat out, I mean, let's just say, if you are depressed because you've made some bad decisions, if you're isolated, get around people. I mean, look, I'm not trying to play armchair psychologist, but I'm telling you, get around people and go do something for others. When you start serving others, you know, whenever I first started, one of the funniest stories I love, and I think I've told it on one of the podcasts before, my first year in business, Phil, I basically just, I lived off savings. And so it comes time to do my first tax return as an entrepreneur, personal tax return. I hadn't taken any income, so I call up my CPA and I go, well, how does this work? I can't get a refund because there's nothing to refund. But during those times, I was very cognizant of the fact that, you know, this business doesn't belong to me. And so what I did, and I'm telling you, check me out on this, check Phil out on this, listener. What I did, and I don't like telling this story because I don't want it to be about me, but because I didn't have anything personally to tithe. I didn't have that 10% because, right, I wasn't taking anything home. Right. So I started doing what you just said. I started taking 10% of the company, whatever was left over, that came off the top. Never missed a payment.
Nope.
The lights always stayed on. And then fast forward to when Chris Phillips and I start WP and Company. You know, I had been a franchisee for years with Century 21. And I decided, what if instead of paying royalties to a franchise, what if we took a percentage and put it back into the community? Chris, being a community and service-minded individual and the greatest business partner I could have ever asked for, we were on the same page. And so to this day, Chris has continued. After I sold my half of WP, Chris has gone on, grown the business. And to this day, WP still gives the first 3% of the commissions earned to this community. And I'm telling you, if you want a surefire way to make yourself feel better, and to your point, to make your employees believe and feel as though they're a part of something bigger, give it away, do for others. It absolutely works.
It's counterintuitive to the person that's just trying to make
right.
Monday happen.
Right, right.
It's counterintuitive. But what Jason just said is absolutely the truth. Now, but I'm going to caution you, don't do it to make yourself feel better.
Absolutely.
That is just something that happens, mm-hmm, because you have done it, mm-hmm, with a pure heart, yep, that you understand that there are people out there that need you. You go, you know, and you know, the you go to help somebody out, and you know it's a blessing to them, but you Absolutely. Yeah. Every single time, leave with more of the blessing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Period.
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt. Well, and okay, now I didn't, I'm not smart enough to set this thing up, but you actually talked about your funeral earlier. And one of the things that I do at the end of every podcast now is, and it's also been kind of funny to me that I think I'm on the right track of who I interview, because everyone has read the same things. We've listened to the same people. And I feel quite certain that if I were in Vegas and I were to wager a bet on whether or not Phil Burks had read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People.
Oh, yes.
Of course, you know.
It's over here on my...
There you go. We've all, you know, it's just kind of like the standard, you know, one of the standard handbooks for the stuff we do. One of the things I've asked, you know, Covey has the chapter where you're outside the church, you hear music, you walk up, you go in.
It's your funeral.
And you realize you're at a funeral, you go to the casket, you're at your funeral.
Right.
So when that day comes for Phil Burks, hopefully many, 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 many years into the future.
I'm ready.
What do what do you want said about you?
Wow. Yeah, you know, I've actually have thought about that. But then I quickly put it out of my head, not because I'm afraid to die. Oh, and by the way, my dad's put it very well. He says, I'm not afraid of death. I'm afraid of dying.
Yeah. You know,
yeah. Death is no big deal.
Right.
Which, by the way, he was a funny guy, and the listeners will just love this. He died at 92. His brain was sharper than yours and mine put together, Jason, just very, very sharp. I was in hospice. I would go. He was in hospice, and I would go in the afternoons, and I would pray with him, and maybe we'd sing a song until he got to where he couldn't do it anymore. And I was walking out one day, and I hear this, "Hey, Phil." I said, "Yeah, Dad. You got a gun?" I said, "Dad, what do you want a gun for?" He says, "I want to shoot the clock on that wall. Sure is running slow."
Oh, man.
just sweetheart of a guy. What I once said at my funeral, you know, he loved Jesus and tried to be Jesus every day.
Wow.
With hands, with a smile. Sorry. That's my goal. You know, he didn't quit. He took risks, calculated risks. You know, I've had people come to me about, you know, getting involved in things that are something I know nothing about, you know, and I just know, you know, I'd rather gamble on things, if I'm going to, quote, gamble on things that I understand.
Right.
And that, you know, he took calculated risks. He tried to build up people so that they could build up others. That's about all I got, Jason.
Well, I tell you, man, it's, you're doing it, brother, because I'm telling you, as a witness, of your work, of your life's work, obviously. No, I know Bobby, your bride, known her for years. And man, I tell you, one of the best parts of this little project called the Texas Titans Podcast is I'm getting to go have conversations with friends that I haven't had.
Yeah.
And I'm truly blessed to know you, for the mentorship you've granted me. And brother, I think you're nailing it. You're nailing it. So with what you just said. And
I keep looking for the rocks every day.
Well, and I'm going to use that one too. That was
help
fantastic.
Yourself. No
and
charge.
Phil, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, I appreciate this time. And it's
my
been
joy.
An absolute pleasure.
My joy.
All right, brother. Thanks.
Well, folks, that does it for another episode of the Texas Titans Podcast. I cannot begin to tell you how grateful I am for you taking the time to listen. I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to email directly about any show ideas, anyone that you think I need to reach out to, just general thoughts on the show. I would be grateful for your feedback. You can do that at jason@texttitans.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at JasonWrightTX. I'm just now getting into the Twitter game. It's pretty much, I've always thought Twitter was kind of a dumpster fire, but you know what? I'm going to keep it positive. I hope you'll do the same thing. So go ahead, if you would, follow me on Twitter. I'm going to try to get a little more active there. Instagram is where I really like to play. I like to post just some cool things like great book deals, great books I'm reading, and as well, that's also where I kind of display my humor a little bit. So JasonWrightNow is literally my name now is where to follow me on Instagram, and I'd be grateful if you did that. Also, our Facebook page, the show page, is Jason Wright TX also. And you can also go to all and look at all past shows as well as show notes at Tex Titans. That's Texas abbreviated, TexTitans.blog. So I would love to hear from you. Please, please, please go out to iTunes, Spotify, wherever there's a way to rate the show and give some feedback. I'm so grateful for you doing that. Again, the feedback and the downloads are just really kind of blowing my mind. I'm so grateful for those of you who are doing this to support me. And hopefully you're finding the guests interesting. I know these are folks that I think the world of. I think they've got interesting stories to tell. And so I want to bring them to you. And I hope that you are enjoying the Texas Titans podcast. Thank you so much. Go out there, crush it, and do something titanic. Thanks, folks. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Texas Titans podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at JasonWrightTX1. That's JasonWrightTX, the number one, or on Facebook at JasonWrightNow. For show notes and upcoming interviews, please visit TexTitans.blog. I also encourage you to visit my personal website at jasonwrightnow.com, where you can download a free copy of my book, Push Play, Taking Your Life Off Pause, for free just by subscribing. Please, please, please remember to subscribe to the podcast and share it with others. I'm truly grateful for you being a part of this journey with me. Get out there and do something titanic. Until next time, thank you so much for listening.